Chapter 17, Consistency and Cold Coffee. My goal in sailing isn't to be brilliant or flashy in individual races, just to be consistent over the long run. Dennis Conner. In the Pacific Northwest, the coffee kiosk is pervasive. Often smaller than 100 square feet in size, these tiny portable buildings inhabit parking lots adjacent to busy intersections and high-traffic streets. Typically operated by perky, bright-eyed baristas, the kiosks are convenient for the drive-up-on-a-whim coffee drinker. The concoctions they serve run the gauntlet of complexity and can cost as much as $8. Although the kiosks offer every coffee drink imaginable, I don't often use them. The infrequent times I drink coffee, I go out of my way to buy it at either a national franchise, guess who, downtown, or a locally operated shop that serves equally good coffee, with a preference for the local shop, because, well, it's local. About 10 years ago, in the midst of my 100-hour work weeks, I experimented with patronizing a new kiosk near my home. On the way to work one morning, I pulled over, desperate for a cup of strong, hot coffee. The barista reached down to my car window and served me my coffee in a paper cup. I set the cup in the holder, negotiated my car back onto the busy street, and was again on my way to the office. I was so ready for that first sip, and yuck! It was tepid, thin, and tasteless. Ugh! I instantly ratcheted to 10 on the frustration level, and have always remembered the intensity of my annoyance with that particular cup of coffee. I drove downtown to one of my standby shops, and with a ceremonial flourish, dumped the still-full kiosk cup in the trash bin outside. I stepped inside and bought another cup. As usual at this shop, the coffee was hot and strong. I remember my satisfaction with that particular cup. Here's the aftermath that, to this day, still surprises me. I shy away from buying coffee at a kiosk. Why? Am I being too critical, too unforgiving? Neither. It's more self-serving than that. It's because I don't want to deal with the inconvenience again, and especially, I don't want to feel like a fool for making the same mistake twice. So, after all these years, my first impulse is to avoid patronizing a kiosk if one of my regular coffee shops is within 5 miles. And my visceral aversion falls on a number of other local establishments, too, including half a dozen restaurants, as many retail stores, and more than one gas station. To be sure, my gut-level judgments are not completely fair or entirely rational, but they are real. Centratel is a pure service operation, so quality of service is my natural mindset. When out and about, I find myself evaluating the service quality of restaurants, sandwich shops, retail stores, movie theaters, plumbers, bed and breakfast, public transportation services, etc. It's an unconscious analysis until I encounter superb service or poor service, at which point I instantly get conscious. On the spot, I have offered jobs to friendly, smart, and upbeat servers or cashiers who can't keep smiles off their faces. Then there are the other times when someone with a lousy attitude forever alienates me from that establishment. Outside of work, my managers naturally do this evaluation too. Once the system's mindset takes hold, it's impossible to ignore. In fairness to kiosk operators, just before the publication of this book, one of my managers informed me that Centratel's Latte Monday drinks, we buy coffee or cocoa drinks for everyone on busy Monday mornings, are now being provided by a kiosk, not one of the local shops, as had been our tradition. Our staff members say the kiosk drinks are consistently superb. Could it be this particular kiosk has something special going on? Could it be it is being operated differently than the cold cup kiosk of so many years ago? The answer to both questions is obviously yes. Why was the coffee so poor at the cold cup kiosk? The proprietor had no procedures installed to ensure consistent quality. She had no clue she had to consciously manipulate systems in order to keep customers. Further, she had no idea of the enormous negative impact of one bad cup of coffee. I am sure she winged it every day, hoping for the best, but more often hitting and missing, depending on her emotions, the attitude of her customers, or even the weather. The result? The kiosk went out of business after just a short time. Watching yourself closely. In observing my own overreaction to that single cup of cold coffee, I learned something. It was clear to me the success of Centratel was going to depend on our ability to provide consistent high quality. What if you work for someone else? That's easy, and here's the mantra. My boss is my primary customer. At work, my number one task is to avoid letting my boss down. Of course, if the boss is impossible or the position is dead-end, exiting the situation is probably a better strategy. I mentioned this earlier. In our culture, and despite the universe's propensity for efficiency, service quality is too often poor, mostly because of the human tendency to neglect systems. But the good news is that it's easy to provide superb service if the focus is on creating and maintaining systems that will ensure consistent quality. Here it is yet again. Creation, maintenance, and improvement of internal systems must be the manager's main objective. The following is a not-so-tongue-in-cheek for instance. You don't want a customer treated badly by an employee who has a hangover. What you want is a system that will cover the bases for someone who is having a bad day, presuming that someone is not a chronic problem employee. You can't stop the person's headache, but you can create solid, fluid, and sensible procedures that will get this employee through the shift without alienating customers. Not providing guidance and leaving things up to your not-doing-so-well-today employee is a losing bet. The numbers do not bode well for you, the business owner or department manager. And what if you have a hangover? If you have worked your systems, you can sit back for a day or so, stay out of the way without gumming up the works with your sour disposition, and let your systems carry the load. It's a powerful human idiosyncrasy, this willingness to make snap yet irreversible negative decisions based on one-time bad experiences. So beware. When customers are disappointed in service, they will have a predilection to go elsewhere next time, never to return. Your best bet is to not fail them in the first place. The tip system. Here's an evaluation system, albeit waggish. It's about tipping in restaurants, and I'll preface things by saying I don't believe a tip is a diner's obligation. It's a tip, something extra one earns if the service he or she delivers is at least good. Linda and I sit down for a meal in a restaurant. At this point, even before saying a word, the wait person, in this case a female, has earned a 25% tip. It's downhill from there. If she greets us with, "How are you guys today?" there is an immediate 5% deduction in the tip for offhandedly calling Linda a guy. Now the tip can be no more than 20%. If the wait person delivers the food and walks away with a semi-pretentious, airheaded enjoy, there is another 5% discount. If she delivers the check along with the food, working man's diners accepted, there is another 5% off the top. If she checks to see how we are doing at mid-meal and blatantly interrupts one of us mid-sentence, yes, there is another 5% deduction. Now we're approaching no tip at all. Although I don't sit there tallying things on paper or even in my head, and seldom does a wait person go without being tipped, the essence of my thinking process is in the above formula. Call me persnickety. It is systems thinking both at its best and at its most ridiculous. How does this relate? If I were the owner of a restaurant, understanding that serving food is a process that repeats itself, I would be watching my own reactions while dining at someone else's restaurant. I'd take notes. In my own restaurant, I would produce a working procedure of never use phrases and actions, and then would make sure every single one of my servers knew it by heart. It would be called the Forbidden Phrases and Actions Procedure. Yes, really, that's exactly what I would call it. This working procedure would be my obsession and my staff center of attention. We would continuously update it using my own experience as well as feedback from customers, open-eyed staff, or whomever. Only one or two pages in length, it would be alive. The continuous centerpiece of discussion and action, a document that old hands and new people would study, discuss, and tweak. With everyone's input, it would improve steadily over time. I would post it prominently in the kitchen, in the back offices, and in the lounge. We would relentlessly work the system to higher and higher efficiency and usefulness. For the owner of a restaurant, how much work is this? A simple document like this could quickly take a restaurant's service quality from mediocre to superb, an incredible payback for a tiny investment of time and effort. we watch and learn. At Centratel, we watch and learn, and we use that information in our work and in our personal lives. We try hard to avoid foul-ups, but when we do commit an error, we are finicky about fixing it. We bombard the unhappy customer with tender, loving care to the point where he or she is happier after the error than before it. Via our complaint procedure, we call the customer back a minimum of 4 times at prescribed intervals of 1 day, 3 days, 10 days, and 30 days to make sure the error has not repeated itself. Yes, that process of fixing things is via a 1-2-3-step documented system. Our complaint procedure doesn't end there. We also inform the entire staff of every complaint, as well as the steps taken to remedy less-than-perfect situations. So you don't operate a business? If you are someone's employee and your position has potential, apply these principles and watch your rapid ascent of the corporate ladder. Tweaking and maintaining. So the primary commonality among large, successful businesses is a steady, concerted effort to maintain consistency in product and service quality. This means that in a prosperous business, the leader spends most of his or her time supervising the tweaking and maintaining of subsystems. The more successful a business is in gaining and retaining customers, the more one can be sure that that business has a strict set of system guidelines for quality control and customer service. Again, for the successful employee aiming to climb the corporate ladder, this system improvement process is also the center of attention, although confined to one's area of responsibility rather than to an entire company. Just how hard can I beat this concept to death? It's all about perfecting systems and then maintaining that perfection. What about your personal life? It's what Mom told you. Always return a friend's phone call promptly, say thank you, pay your bills on time, and pay attention to holidays. Don't forget birthdays. If you promise something, make sure you do it no matter how trivial. Do these things consistently and people will trust you. They will want to help you. They will know you are dependable and will want to spend time with you. A place for everything and everything in its place. Work the system methodology relies on the personal habit of consistency, the child of character, and self-discipline. Consistency is not a hand tool one picks up from the tool bench to use only when needed. It is a personal trait to pack around everywhere, a trait to be used every minute, permanently embedded in the fiber of your being. To cultivate this trait, the largest challenge is to fight old habits, simple laziness, and procrastination, while channeling moment-to-moment activities into organized, efficient systems. However, by paying attention, good results come home quickly. With those successes, you'll find that consistency soon becomes effortless, and backtracking into old habits dissatisfying. It is no good to set up a system of organization at work and then return home to chaos. It doesn't work to exercise a few days of the month, be nice to your spouse most of the time, or to apply the work-the-system principles sporadically. If life is to be efficient, maintaining your systems and staying organized is a full-time job. 50 years ago, my grandfather carefully explained, "Sam, there is a place for everything and everything in its place." I was 8 years old then, and I wondered how Grandpa knew his favorite platitude was true and why he seemed so caught up in the idea. Was there proof this was a good idea? His simple explanation was, "It's just true that being organized is worthwhile." At first, if you must, take it on faith that being organized is something good. Then find the time tomorrow to clean that top drawer in your desk, and this weekend, go out to the garage and start the cleanup. Do some organizing every day, even if it's just for 15 minutes each time. Work on the old clutter, but also, from this point forward, avoid creating new clutter as you move through the day. It might take weeks or months to take care of getting things in order, but this is what you must do to drop into the groove of the system's mentality. Accomplish this cleanup and then step back and ask yourself how you feel. There will be intense satisfaction, and the great thing is this satisfaction is addicting. You'll want to feel it again and again. Keep at it, and soon disorder will bother you. You'll become a fanatic about organization and systems thinking as you discover that your world is becoming smooth and efficient. Be consistent, and with consistency comes strength. Plow through the disorder in your life, and you will find the process is exactly congruent with the other aspects of the work the system method. You'll see disorganization in the people and places around you, disorganization you can't fix, and you will shake your head as you understand the waste of it. Will your new orderliness make you an uptight control freak? No. On the contrary, as I pointed out in the beginning of the book, you'll loosen up and feel relaxed and effective. You'll be a smooth operator with time and energy to spare. Illustration: breaking the rules and job security. The following example has nothing to do with good or bad employees or about discipline or conflict resolution. Simply, it has to do with thorough documentation and staff buy-in. With clear-cut rules, no gray areas exist to cause uncertainty or anxiety. Several years ago, we had problems with two Centratel employees. The first one's work was very good, but he failed a random drug test. The second one's work quality was also exceptional, but she violated our computer privacy policy. Both instances were serious breaches of the company's written guidelines. What to do? It crossed our minds that we could sweep these major offenses under the carpet in order to spare unpleasantness and eliminate a time-consuming search for replacements. But we had to ask, if we keep employees who violate policy, wouldn't this render our policies impotent? The system solution? We spell out rules, regulations, and guidelines in our employee handbook, viewing this collection of policies as a primary system in itself, a giant working procedure. You can find the entire 35,000-word document at centratel.com under Resources. All employees are required to understand the company's policies and, by signing a statement, show that they accept them as a condition of employment. Per the handbook, these serious violations were cause for employment termination, and that's what happened. We ended their employment on the spot. There was no arbitrary, manipulative corporate judgment call. We simply followed the conditions of employment system that had been set up in advance. Our system allows management to be completely objective, remaining outside of any emotional or manipulative positioning. The employee handbook spells out our policies exactly and explains the ramifications of not following them. These two employees knew they were gambling. They lost their respective gambles, and their departures were simple and clean. Parties on both sides, and our remaining staff, understood why these terminations occurred. Because we follow policies exactly, all Centratel employees know that a deliberate act of crossing the line will not be met with wishy-washy, don't-let-it-happen-again platitudes or interminable second chances. After a serious violation, do employees deserve a second chance? Well, actually, no. As a matter of policy, they don't. But because of this intractable position, policy violations seldom arise, and we are not often faced with letting someone go. Employees want rules to be consistent and fair, and in contrast to some conventional corporate wisdom, my partner and I believe that when we let someone go for assertively violating clear-cut policy, our remaining employees feel more secure in their jobs, not less. Yes, we lost two valuable people, but the losses were outweighed by the positive long-term effects on the remaining rule-abiding staff who always understand where things stand and that management is fair. There is an important subtlety here that I want to clarify. Did we terminate the employment of these two individuals to set an example? No. We terminated their employment because that's the deal. If an example was set, it was a byproduct of the action. Do you see recurring negative situations with the people in your workplace where clarification on paper would eliminate future contention? Does it make sense that establishing clear-cut rules in advance, before any contentious situation has occurred, would dramatically eliminate future conflict?